The BMC Amy Z Talk and Coffeeware Modern Mainframe Podcasts have joined forces. You can find your favorite episodes from both podcasts, as well as new insight and discussion at soundcloud.com/modernmainframe.
Another episode of the BMC Amy Z Talk podcast. I'm your host, Jill Perez, and today I'm joined by Grant McDonald, Marketing Director for BMC Amy Security Solutions, and Chad Rickensrue, Director of Security Consulting Services here at BMC. So today we're going to be debunking the myth that the mainframe can't be hacked. So Grant, I'll let you go ahead and take it from here.
Thank you, Jill. So this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart, Chad's heart. I know he's done countless presentations on this at many events across Black Hat, DEF CON, Share, you name it. It's probably been something he's spoken, and you may have even heard him at one of those events, those of you that are listening. But for those who don't know Chad, I wonder if you might kind of start out by giving a little bit of the background before we get into how a mainframe is hacked, kind of your journey into discovering that for yourself, because I don't think you always were kind of the mainframe hacking guru you are now, right?
Hey, Grant. No, I'm not. Thanks for having me here. Nope, that is the case. In fact, I've only been doing mainframe from a technical perspective for maybe the last, I'll be generous here and say 12 or 13 years, which makes me a noob by mainframe standards, where most of the people have 20, 30, 40 years of experience. So definitely did not grow up in mainframe, but how I got here, to answer your question, I worked for a global financial institution and I was running mainframe infrastructure for them, a lot of their storage and their ability to recover and all things data privacy and that sort of stuff. And one of the things that occurred to me, this was about the time when ransomware had started to become really in vogue. So, you know, maybe, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it just kind of occurred to me when I, because I've always had my background is in Linux and networking and security. And I was really fascinated by this idea of ransomware and how the bad guys of the world have now really figured out how to monetize their nefarious behavior in a very, very efficient manner, which is ransomware. And I got to thinking about like, well, you know, I wonder who's doing the kind of research on the mainframe that would protect it from this sort of stuff. Cause I was always fascinated by the people that, you know, Microsoft releases a patch because somebody found an O-day in their TCP IP stack. And I'm like, man, that is just so cool. Who is doing this kind of research on the mainframe and would it be susceptible to the types of things that we see that allow for something like ransomware, as an example, to happen? And so I, having access to all kinds of resources because I worked for a giant bank, I just started poking at it and really teaching myself COS in the mainframe in order to go get to the point where I could write exploits and test them and kind of stuff. And it, just to give you an idea of the undertaking there, and I don't mean this to my own horn, but it took me a couple years of heads down technical work on the mainframe to get to the point where I could even really start that. I mean, it'd be the equivalent of, you know, learning to crawl so you could run a marathon, right? It was quite an undertaking. But, you know, the punchline of the whole thing is it's just another computer. And it's absolutely susceptible to all the types of vulnerabilities and attacks that all the other computers are. It's a computer operating system written by humans for humans. And as such, there are mistakes that are out there and misconfigurations and coding errors that can all be exploited. And so I started figuring out how to do that and writing talks, as you mentioned, and tools and that sort of stuff to do that. And here we are.
Gotcha. You mentioned how it took you some time to kind of get up to speed and understand the mainframe. Now, this is something I think that somebody on the other end I could see listening to this say, aha, see, it took you how long to get up to speed on the mainframe before you knew how to uncover all these compromises. Do you think it still takes somebody to really get that level of expertise in order to compromise a mainframe, or is it simpler than that?
Yeah, it takes a long time. And here's why. It's an operating system that is unlike any other operating system. It is not forgiving. It does not give you, there's no training wheels for it. You know, there's no wizards or, you know, kind of like scripts you can follow along with. There are attempts at that, but to really understand, for instance, if you want to write an exploit of something, I mean, you really have to understand how memory is organized and how programs are organized and how they work and how things are stored on disk. And to get to that level, you have to first understand basic stuff on the operating system, how to install it, how to upgrade it, how does it boot, how does the load process work, all that. That's just a tremendous amount of information there that is not what that. So there's two things. One is it's well documented to the point where it's actually, I would say, over documented. Everything is documented. There are tens and tens of thousands of pages of documentation, but none of it is presented in a way that is like, so you want to exploit the mainframe, here's what you need to know, right? I mean, you can go out and take a class on how to do that in Windows and have relatively little Windows experience, and they will take you right to the head of the class of like, okay, here's the kernel and here's how it works and here's how drivers work and here's how memory works and so on and so forth. That isn't really exist for the mainframe. The classes and the stuff that's out there that exists for DOS are really geared at people who want to learn how to, you know, develop programs for it or operate it or use it. But in terms of the people who want to do what I'm doing, which is like find vulnerabilities and exploit them and that kind of, and learn how to pen test it and improve that discipline, that knowledge isn't really out there. We've been forging by and large an untested trail, with the exception of a few people out there in the world who've done a little bit of this work as well.
Gotcha. So do you think that in part is what gives credence to the belief sometimes that people feel the mainframe should not be regarded as part of their security plan because they feel it's kind of this box in the back corner that doesn't really require the same controls as a Windows device?
Yeah, I think there's a couple. I think there's a few reasons why. And we're basing it, your question is based on the premise that two things. One, people think the mainframe is inherently secure. A lot of people think it's inherently secure, both people who know it and people who don't know it, I might add, because people who know it will say, hey, we don't read about mainframe breaches and we've got all these controls. People who don't know it will just say, look, we've never had a problem. Why would we start having them now? We have problems with our IoT and our Windows and our Linux. So that's the premise of your question is, you know, why is that people do think that? And what we also know, what you and I both know, and some of the people listening to this probably know, is that that's not true. We do pen testing and assessments of mainframes all the time and find that they're woefully insecure in terms of their configuration. Not that they couldn't be secured. They're very capable of being secured, but they're just not. And so I think the guts of your question are, why is that the case? And I think there's a couple big reasons for that. Yes, it is resting on somewhat of a security by obscurity, but that's not the reason why people think it's secure. I think that's maybe one of the reasons why we don't see more breaches of it, is because it's very obscure and hard to get your hands on. But we know that that's not a good way to, you know, keep it secure. It also, you know, people think it's secure because they get this kind of false sense of security because vulnerabilities aren't publicized well and publicly and that kind of stuff. So to the why, I think there's two big reasons why. One is that the people have conflated reliability with security. So a well-built mainframe system can be exceptionally reliable. And I mean like 100% uptime reliable, right? Like 6, 7, 9s uptime or 100%. Because you can have local geographic work balance, workload balancing, you can have failovers at multiple geographic distances and that kind of stuff. You literally can build a mainframe and design it so that you have zero unplanned downtime. And people conflate that resiliency and reliability with security, because what we've learned is that if something gets hacked, we often see disruptions in service, right? Or we see slowdowns, or we see all kinds of stuff in it. And, you know, the mainframe just works, right? So people don't, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, right? So that's one reason people have money to spend, CISOs and CIOs have money to spend, they're going to spend it on the squeaky wheel, the things that are regularly getting hacked or vulnerabilities or needing upgrades or whatever. The mainframe just works. And so we tend to think of things that are solid and reliable and resilient as also being secure. And so that's one fallacy. The second reason I think that people think that it's inherently secure is because of, I think that's an unintended consequence of how IBM manages this platform. And I don't mean that as a slight to them. It's just a fact, and here's what I mean by that. When IBM releases any feature, bar none, and I'm saying any, almost unequivocally, there's very, very little exception to this rule. They almost always release it in a backwards compatible mode, so such that it doesn't break your existing implementation. So let me give you an example. Several years ago, there were multiple bugs found in SSL, right? You remember they all had fun names like Poodle and Heartbleed mm-hmm. and stuff like that, right?
Yep,
these were catastrophic bugs, catastrophic, that absolutely rendered those versions of SSL completely insecure and inoperable. And is the case where, this is just an example, but a lot of companies, when they released new versions of whatever their widgets are with SSL in them, they disabled that and enabled TLS 1.0, 1.1, whatever. And it broke a lot of stuff, but it was like, hey, we can't send this insecure version out anymore. We've really got to, you know, do this. So I'm sorry that we're going to break your widget, but we have to release this with the new version of SSL. When IBM releases that, they released for a long time. The old versions were still enabled and you were still able to use them. And the exercise was left for the user to find out where those versions were being used, disable them, and enable the new versions. So that requires work and research and effort on the side of the client, but everything's still working. Do you know what I mean? And so if that also then kind of makes the platform insecure, because at the same time, we're losing mainframers, right? We're losing those really intelligent people who've been managing these systems. We get fewer and fewer of them. And so if you want somebody, if you want to make sure you're always up to date on security, you have to have a dedicated team of people always looking at what's coming out new, evaluating it, evaluating on the mainframe where you could use it, implementing it, you know, rolling it out. Otherwise, it'll just keep working. And so there's no incentive really to constantly secure it, because you run the risk of then causing a production outage or something like that. And so the fact that it's always this backwards compatible, that it's always all of these releases are released silently, if you will, again, leads us to a position where it becomes very insecure, but we have this false sense of security because everything is working correctly, that it is secure. I know that's kind of a long-winded answer, but I don't know really of any way to shorten it. And that's why we are where we are today.
Yeah. And that, you know, one thing you mentioned there is, and we see it obviously quite a bit, but the lack of well-publicized cases, although there are cases, you know, the one that comes to mind for me is the 13-year-old in Australia that hacked Apple's mainframe multiple times. So there are those, but they don't get necessarily the headline, or they're not as prevalent as, you know, the Marriott breach or something that gets the, you know, lion's share of coverage. So, you know, either from those that you're aware of, or just, you know, without naming names of an environment, a customer, whomever you might have been inside of, can you share kind of an example of how a real world exploit, or, you know, maybe compromise or threat kind of you found that maybe had gone undetected?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that happens a lot is, and I say a lot, like I know of multiple examples where the front end of somebody's network infrastructure, application infrastructure, is breached, and the data that the thieves are pilfering comes from the mainframe. So they're not directly hacking the mainframe because they don't need to. And I think that's a lot of why we don't see more front page mainframe breaches, is because you've got a SQL server back-ending your web app and it's vulnerable to SQL injection, or you've got a web app that's vulnerable to SQL injection, but the data that's actually getting pulled from originates in the mainframe. So it's not really a mainframe breach. You're still getting the data from there. However, we definitely see, you know, one of the most insidious ones that we see are probably well-meaning, but we don't know for sure, but probably well-meaning employees who know better, leaving themselves back doors on the mainframe, right? So this is really common. You've got this confluence of events of people don't really understand how to like scan the mainframe for these kinds of vulnerabilities and backdoors and such. You've got a few people who really understand it well and would know how to write themselves this type of, you know, privilege escalation backdoor. And you've got an overarching enterprise push at every enterprise to remove administrator rights, right? And so what happens is you get, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but it's just a breach waiting to happen, is you've got these really intelligent people who manage the system their whole life who are huffy and say, ah, well, I'm not gonna let, you know, my manager Grant and all the people who think that they know better than I do take away my privileges, because then the next time that the system goes down, I'm not gonna be able to help fix it, and then it's gonna be my fault, right? I've heard that exact line multiple times. And so they write themselves a cute little program, little cute little backdoor that they can just flip a switch and ultimately have, you know, super user privileges for whatever period of time they need them, and then flip it off, and it all goes very much under the radar. Well, listen, if you could do that and have it, that means I can find it. And if I can find it in the limited amount of time that I have when I'm doing a pen test or something like that, then anybody who was, you know, a persistent bad actor on your network certainly could find it. And now you've just sort of left a key under the mat, right? And we see that all the time. In fact, not only do we see that happening from internal employees, but we see vendors doing it. We found vendor software that has these backdoors in it so that, you know, vendor A can come in and maybe they need to do some troubleshooting. And so again, they leave themselves the key under the mat so that they can come, let's just assume everybody has their best interest in mind, but how we are responsible, because we have reverse engineered vendor software and found, I gave a talk about it at Black Hat, and found these back doors and like, you know, working as designed, right? Because they intentionally put them there. So we have seen these kinds of things that just live out there for years and years unnoticed, or maybe not, because those are the kinds of back doors where if you had that level of access, you could do whatever you wanted and not have anybody really be able to trace your steps.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know, and I remember, Chad, you said something interesting I've heard you say before about, you know, the mainframe as a, not just an access point for, you know, potentially a threat or a threat actor. And, you kind of alluded to it being on that back end where it might even be part of an attack where something's pulled from. But I've heard you give the example before of ransomware with the mainframe. You mentioned ransomware a little bit earlier before, but I think it's probably one of the more chilling things I've ever heard you say. How actually a mainframe is probably maybe one of the best targets to deploy and issue ransomware out throughout a company and leveraging it as kind of a, you know, a harbinger of an attack in a way.
Yeah, I love to tell this story, so I apologize in advance because I've probably told this story anytime anyone has ever asked me about ransomware, but I'll tell it again because I think it's a good story. I got pulled into a conference call when I worked at the bank, and it was one of these where my manager said, I need you to join this call and don't ask who is on the call. So that usually means that there were probably a bunch of like, you know, C-levels who wanted some plausible deniability about it. But I got asked the question, like, do you think that we could ever get ransomware on the mainframe? And I hadn't really given it much thought before that. And, you know, it took me just a few seconds and I was like, well, absolutely. And it would work really well, because here's the thing. At the end of the day, ransomware is just file encryption, right? And file encryption is something that is touted on the mainframe regularly. It's disk IO and encryption. The mainframe is blazing fast at both of those things, right? It's one of the reasons why people keep mainframes around is because of the disk IO speeds that they can get out of them. And we all know, or maybe we don't all know, but it wouldn't take you do much Googling to know that it's also an encryption beast, right? From the Z14, Z15 on, the thing is just a monster in terms of speed and ability to do encrypted data. And so if you just think of ransomware, forget about the delivery mechanism for a minute. If you just think of a ransomware as basically just data encryption, and then really what makes it ransomware versus just like, you know, pervasive encryption is really just who has the keys. The IBM marketing people don't like it when I say that, but it's the truth. And the only difference between ransomware and pervasive encryption is who holds the keys. And if you, when I said this to that crew of people at the bank, I got the question, was like, yeah, but you can't open an email in the mainframe. And I took it just a beat to think about the question. And I realized that, you know, we're confusing a delivery mechanism with the payload, right? So if you think about ransomware, we think about, we got an email from our grandma with like, hey, here's my chocolate chip cookie recipe. And you open a PDF and the PDF's infected and it takes over your computer and then you have ransomware and ha ha ha, now you got to send me some Bitcoin. Well, what if that, you know, you can't do that on the mainframe, right? That doesn't work quite like that. But what if we just change the payload a little bit? I did a share talk about this where I actually wrote this and demonstrated same upfront premise. You get the email, the PDF, you do everything right. You click on a bad link. Somebody's got an OData in your browser. Your Windows machine gets infected. We all know that Windows machines can get infected and it's not that hard to do. It happens all the time. But what if the payload isn't encrypt your Windows machine? What if the payload is sniff your credentials the next time you type them into the mainframe, connect to the mainframe on your behalf, and upload some programs to the mainframe and let the ransomware run there? And when I had to take this on the road, when I was still at the bank, I got a lot of pushback on that. And I said, look, this is something you should really be thinking about, because all of your systems are backed up and recovered by data replication now. And data replication doesn't know the difference between valid data and recently encrypted via ransomware data. So now your ransomware data is everywhere. And I said, you know, these guys could do damage to you in a way that you would never do meaningful business again, right? I mean, it's a serious, serious threat. And it has actually, these conversations, I'd like to think, and I kind of know, have caused the likes of IBM and EMC Dell to create the ability to have like frozen copies of data that are arm's length, that can't be written to, so that you could have a fallback if you believed you got some corruption. You'd lose some RPO, but you could go back to a point where you believe that you didn't have any data corruption going on, versus everything being real-time replicated. So it is a chilling story. I'm delighted that we don't see it on a regular basis, but there's absolutely nothing preventing it in most cases.
So let's say, depending on who our audience is here, we've probably got a few different people. Those that are just trying to get a basic understanding of what securing the mainframe looks like. Maybe they're trying, you know, maybe they've been a little bit doubtful that it's realistic, and those that are actively securing mainframes, they subscribe to the idea that it's another system that houses really sensitive data. What would you say to those that are, you know, maybe starting to get a little curious and wondering where they should start? They're basically where you were a few years back.
Yeah.
How would you suggest kind of they get up to speed? And those that are maybe kind of, you know, a little bit farther down the path, what advice would you give them?
Yeah. So great question. I mean, for those that are mainframe security curious, I mean, one benefit that they've got right now is the body of work that has been produced in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years is tremendous. And so all the stuff that I've put out there, but like my friend Phil Young and my colleague who also works for BMC, Mark Wilson, and there's a few other folks, Ayub and Henry Kuiper and a number of other folks who've done work in this space and released tooling and talks and research on it. So just by going back through the backlog, through the log of things that have been done by those half dozen people, can really get you up to speed conceptually. The big hurdle is usually just getting your, if you really want to start doing this, having a mainframe where you can do some of this and test some of this stuff out. If you're in charge of it, that shouldn't be too hard. If you're a hobbyist or somebody who wants to learn, it's a little harder, but there are ways to do it. Like, you know, IBM makes a virtual machine mainframe called ZPDT that you can buy for reasonably inexpensive amounts of money. And I'm talking in mainframe dollars, reasonably inexpensive, like several thousand versus, you know, tens or hundreds or millions, that you can run on Linux and do a lot of your own testing and research and that kind of stuff. So that's a good place to start, is by just looking at the body of work that's already out there by those of us who've been doing this research now for the last decade or so, if you want to, if you're somebody who's already kind of seen the light and is following along and really wants to make a difference, then you, then what I would do is then it's probably time to engage an expert of some sort, right? It's probably time to have a conversation with one of us, have a conversation with somebody at, like at BMC or otherwise, about how you can take that to the next level. Because then it's about doing more sophisticated things like vulnerability scanning and pen testing, connecting your mainframes to your SIM, all those sorts of things. Once you've gotten past the basic configuration, the basic patching, vulnerability management, then it's really about now how do you make the mainframe talk to your enterprise and be compliant with your enterprise policies and procedures.
Gotcha. So I think that's about all time we have for today. So I'm going to turn the floor back to Jill.
Great. Well, thank you, Grant. And a very special thanks, Chad, for joining us today. This was super insightful. I know that you covered a lot of ground here, I think, in educating us on the mainframe and really, I think, an eye-opener for us to understand how it does need to be considered as something else that needs to be more secured. So thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So for those that want to learn more about what you can do to make your mainframe more secure, you can visit bmc.com/Amy-security. And Amy is spelled A-M-I. And again, that's bmc.com/Amy-security. But to our listeners, we'd like to thank you for joining us. And please be sure to stay tuned. We're going to have more episodes coming soon. And I'm sure we're going to be having Grant and Chad back on for some more. But that is a wrap for now. So thank you for listening to the BMC Amy Z Talk podcast. Have a wonderful day.
The BMC Amy Z Talk and Capuware Modern Mainframe podcasts have joined forces. You can find your favorite episodes from both podcasts, as well as new insight and discussion at soundcloud.com/modernmainframe.